You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Spencer, what was it like to come down here, joint practices with the Bucs for the last 2 days?
We got a lot of good work in. They got some good players, and it's good to go against someone other than yourself, your own teammates, hit some different guys. But all together, I think we got some good work in, and it's preparing us for the game.
How different is it to go against another team than it is to go against the same team every day?
You just have to get used to the different fronts. I kind of liked it going against these guys because you get a taste of what you're going to see on Friday. You get their moves, their rushes, their techniques and all that. You really get to study it on, a firsthand basis rather than just on film.
How important is it or how different is it to go against the 4-3 front, which you'll see week one against the Eagles, as opposed to the 3-4 you see every day in practice?
It's a little bit different, but we have rules for, both fronts. We just have to revert back to the four down rules and keep going. I think we've done a pretty good job out here. I'm just excited to get out there on Friday.
So you've been some at right tackle. I've seen you at left tackle. I've seen you play, we'll call it big tight end. I've seen you play, I'll call it wide receiver out there. So has it been kind of a neat experience? Because I know you were a left tackle at Baylor, just to kind of move around and learn so much.
It is, definitely getting the opportunity to get out there and play a bunch of positions, helps my chances of, being around and sticking this team out. And definitely, I like the experience. It gets me out there. I like to think I'm a little bit of an athlete, so I get to kind of showcase it when I line up outside. But, not much of an athlete, but a little bit.
So Joe Thomas told us the other day that he thought if he went from left tackle to right tackle, it'd probably take him 2 to 3 months to actually master it. And I know that's a transition that you've had to make. How hard has it been doing everything the opposite?
You'd think it's pretty easy because you just have to flip everything, but the flipping everything is the problem.
Sure.
Because after, I played left tackle for 7 years, all the body mechanics are set up to play left tackle. All the thousands upon thousands of reps that I have for muscle memory want to take back over when I'm on the right side. So it does take a lot of time. So, right now I'm bouncing back and forth. I'm primarily playing left, but I got to still work my right sets just in case,
Absolutely. Anything that you can do to help the team. What's it like being out there in that jumbo tight end role?
It's a lot of fun. In essence, it's another guy out there just to go and pound people, but there's some fun things we can do out of it too. But most of the time it's just another offensive lineman getting in there. Sometimes we do some other sets. I'll line up at the tackles or whatever, but it's a lot of fun out there. I'm enjoying it.
What do you think has been the most valuable thing you've learned so far in the NFL?
The difference that a couple inches makes, in college, and I guess it's more of that jump from the NFL to college, or the college to NFL. They talk about the speed and everything, but it's really, it comes down to just a couple inches. If your head's in the right spot or like 3 inches off, it's a matter of winning or losing the block. And so, that's been the most valuable thing I've learning, and I'm continuing to learn it, continuing to master it, learn the technique that we have here. So it's been a blast though.
Has it been invaluable to have a guy like Joe Thomas in the room who's arguably one of the best to ever do what he does?
Absolutely. He's so willing to help out, especially the young guys. Anybody who has a question, he'll help out. But, I go in for a couple reps and come off, and he's sitting back there, he's watching and saying, hey, do this, this, and this. And even just from the little time I've been here, I've learned so much from him, and I think my game's developed so much just by watching him and listening to him.
Has he given you some fashion tips? I mean, after all, I'm playing this week down here,
he was looking
pretty strong.
He was, he rocked the white fedora with the red shirt. He's looking very, very Florida-ish, I can't pull off a fedora, but he can rock the heck out of it.
I think you can. I think you've got a lot of potential. So the one thing, last one I want to ask you, which is another fun kind of question, is we've seen you kind of be in there, some play action, and the ball's gone your way here or there a couple of times. Did you ever think you're going to have to contemplate a possible touchdown dance?
No.
Have you contemplated it?
Well, I've always, back in college, we always did the lift, so I can't lift myself, so maybe reversing the roles with Corey lifting me or something like that might be kind of fun. But I think we'll cross that bridge when we get there, but I gotta start thinking about that a little bit.
Yeah, you got to. And how crazy is it to have such a Baylor connection here on this team?
It's been a lot of fun. We all know how each other work. We all come from the same roots at Baylor. The mentality is all the same. We're going to get out there and grind every day. And so it's been a lot of fun. And, there's a sense of familiarity with the guys that you have on the team. I met Josh a couple times at Baylor, but I never got to play with him. Griff, I had a year, and then Corey, I had a couple years with. So, you know, just knowing them here and what they can do, and you know, it's good to have them. Yeah. And there's actually another guy on the Bucks out here that played as well, so we got to, you know, see and reunite with him. So
could add a basketball team. Probably out here. Oh, yeah. Spencer, thanks so much, man. Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
That's Spencer Drango, and you got to like the fact that this is a guy who's got to contemplate touchdown dances. You know what I'm saying? Touchdown dances for a
we'll see
what I'm saying. But that's the thing that Hugh Jackson does. He keeps you guessing. He shows it to you. He's lined up at that jumbo tight end. This is a young guy that I know the coaches have loved. They love his work ethic. They love his knowledge of the game. Huge aptitude. As I was attempting to say before we went to that interview, this is a guy who was a Big 12 offensive lineman of the year, multiple time All-American, didn't give up a single sack in his senior season among the Power 5 conferences. Every year that Pro Football Focus did the college grades, he was a top 10 tackle. This is a very good football player who maybe doesn't have that size that jumps at you or the athleticism that jumps out at you, but he certainly has those intangibles and his knowledge of the game, his technique, and his ability, I've been told, is he's been working a lot at the left side again now. I think this is the guy that could develop into the heir apparent for Joe Thomas and be a great succession plan for this team.
I 100% agree. I think that those guys have really done. Hal Hunter and his staff have done a nice job getting him to where he needs to be, because he's another one of those guys that really didn't shine necessarily during the mini camps and the OTAs and whatnot. He was one of those guys that just was kind of under the radar. You didn't know really what to expect. Okay, we just drafted Sean Coleman. Now we're taking another guy. It's a pretty loaded offensive lineman room. Alvin Bailey's in that mix. You know, where does he fit? And all he's done is put himself in a position where he's, could you make the argument that he's the sixth man on that offensive line? I mean, he is the backup right now. If one of those guys goes down, except at the center position, he's handling your tackle responsibilities, and he could probably play guard.
He could probably kick inside. We also know that if he had to, Austin Pastore can kick inside, where he played guard last year for this team. Alvin Bailey's been getting work at guard. So there is a lot of flexibility there. But Drango's a guy that has come in and certainly has really impressed. And, you know, it's funny, you think about it, you could have on a four Baylor guys out there. You know, he played 1 year with Robert Griffin, as we heard. He didn't play with Josh Gordon, but knew him and played the multiple years with Corey Coleman. And it would be maybe four guys out of 11 potentially on for the Browns. There will be times this year when four out of the 11 guys on the field for the Browns offense will all be Baylor Bears, with Griffin, with Gordon, with Coleman, and Drango in some of those jumbo sets.
Let's hope it's more than just a few times.
Yeah, let's go. Art Briles will certainly be loving that, a guy who came out and saw Browns camp earlier this year. 216-578-0850 is the way to call us as we continue our second hour here on CBD. Wanted to let you guys know what is coming up. At 2:15, we'll hear, when we come back, Terrell Pryor at the podium after yesterday's practice. We've got Greg Oman, the Bucks NFL writer for Tampa Bay Times, talk about the Bucks and give the other perspective. We've heard, you know, yesterday a Browns beat writer's perspective on these 2 days. Let's get a Bucks beat writer's perspective on these 2 days. Again, we'll take your calls. We've got your tweets in the mailbag. We're going to get Jason Gibbs to get us some of those as well. So a lot to do here. Still only 45 minutes to do it, but we want to cram it in. We want to hear from you, and we want to take more time here to talk about this Browns team as they get ready for what is really the penultimate preseason game number 3 against the Buccaneers, Raymond James Stadium, Friday night in, of course, prime time.
Get on my elevator, baby, we're going up. Give me that now and later, I can't get enough. So much to discover, please don't.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Jason Gibbs,
thing on your head.
Down here in Tampa. And Terrell Pryor continues to look right now, I'd say, you know, certainly like one of the best receivers on the field. And let me tell you something. One of the things that was fun for me, I love watching wide receivers. This was a great couple of days to watch receivers. You had on our side Gordon, Coleman, Pryor, And on their side,
it was an embarrassment of riches.
Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson. Vincent Jackson can still play the game, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you that. Yeah. So
Mike Evans had a sweet catch yesterday too down the side.
Oh, and he's big. I have a lot of respect for his game. He certainly is pretty darn talented. And Vincent Jackson looked good. There were just a lot of good wide receiver play out there today, but it kind of slowed down. Joe Hayden did a very good job out there. Jamar Taylor did a very good job out there as well for the Browns in the defensive backfield, which was certainly a good thing to see. Now, I talked about Terrell Pryor and his ascension. He spoke with the media after practice, and here's what Terrell Pryor had to say.
Terrell, what did you think about going against Grimes and other defensive players out there?
First, how was the weather for you guys? How was your trip? How are people? I love seeing you guys. How was it?
Good.
All right. Glad you guys got here safe. It was fun. You know, it's fun always to go against another competitor. You know, guys like that, guys that, you know, pro bowlers, you know, guys that make big plays and to go out and make some plays on them and then make plays on you. You know, it's all about competing. And it was a good day.
Terrell, how exciting is it when you think about you and Gordon on the field at the same time? And do you think that's a mismatch problem for defense?
You know, I don't want to go, you know, and put bulletin board material and stuff on there, because, I mean, we're all pros out here. We're all going to battle. But, I mean, if you look at just the size and the speed and, you know, of what me and Josh has, you know, of course it's somewhat of a disadvantage in some stuff. But, you know, we're going to go out there and battle our butts off. I mean, we got great talent. You know, we got Corey. Corey's coming back. You know, he'll be back tomorrow, full go, you know. And Hawk's coming back, you know. And we're starting to get our guys back, you know. So it's exciting. And we just got to get better as a whole, as a group, and play harder tomorrow.
What are the benefits? Are you seeing the benefits of going up against another team and testing yourself against other guys?
Absolutely, because you get different looks, you know. And the possibilities of you're going to see different looks all season long, you know. So can we come here from Ohio on a trip, on a day trip? Got here yesterday. Can we come in pretty much, we got to play this as a game today and tomorrow, and then we play Friday. But, you know, can we come here and battle our butts off, practice hard, you know, and fight for Cleveland? And I think we did a good job today, but we had to clean some stuff up.
Terrell, is there one major reason why you're able this year to practice every single day?
I just think I'm one of the hardest workers. I don't think anybody's outworked me, and just my off season was fantastic, and that's all.
You know, speaking of that, you've had the recent videos on social media of you riding your bike to work. Is that, I mean, is that a routine you've been doing for a long time?
Yeah,
or is that recent?
I just started doing it again. I just got my bike down here, you know, it's different, you know, because I could get my legs loose a little bit, get cardio as well. You know, you can never get enough cardio. And, you know, especially off a two-day break we had. So, you know, you want to get back in, sweat a little bit before you get into work. And it was cool.
How long a ride is that for you?
It's takes about 15, 20 minutes.
So time for two more questions,
What
guys.
About the heat? What impact is that having today, on you guys today?
Today you can see it. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that it didn't, you know, because it hit me. You know, and I, like I said, I view myself and I view a lot of the guys on the team as very hard workers. So, you know, tomorrow should be better. You know, it kind of takes a day or so to adapt to this humidity and this heat. So hopefully we come back out tomorrow and battle again and even have a better day than we had today.
Terrell, just from going against the Browns DBs, what have you noticed about Jamar Taylor's game?
Jamar Taylor. Out?
He's getting an opportunity to start.
He's a fast guy. I think he's solid overall. You know, he's a guy married guy, very, very into his work. You know, he takes his work and job. I can tell you guys that he takes his job and his work, his family, very, very serious. And it's great to see. You know, I was sitting in the sauna one day talking to him, and just how focused the guy is. I mean, it's when I saw it on there, you know, I wasn't surprised, because I just know the mindset he has and how great he wants to be and the way he lives his life. So it's exciting.
That's Terrell Pryor, and two good days of work there for Terrell Pryor in this receiving core. And I'm excited to see them Friday night when they can play three quarters together. Because one of the things, and we've seen the big plays from Pryor, but we haven't seen Coleman yet, we haven't seen Gordon, and we haven't seen Hugh Jackson. And not that I think he's going to get into much game planning in the third game, but we haven't seen him get to work with this group for three quarters and start to set things up, and for Terrell Pryor to work against the DB for an extended period of time and learn how to set up his moves and you know, lull him into sleep for something later on in the game. And I think we're going to be our first opportunity to see things like that.
I definitely want to see Terrell Pryor, not just the guy streaking down the sideline with a 44-yard touchdown, for a 45-yard touchdown, for a 50-yard touchdown. I want to see the 10-yard pass. I want to see him come across the middle and make a catch on a 10 to 15-yard route. You know, I want to see him stretch the field a little bit, but I got to know that he can do some of the other things other than just run straight down the sideline.
Sure, of course. Of course, that's what he's got to be able to do.
David Cole Gray tweets at the show, as many of you have and can continue to do here on this Mailbag Wednesday, at Browns_daily, hashtag AskCBD. Been hearing a lot about Coleman and Higgins as rookies. What's been going on with Lewis and Peyton?
So Coleman is the top rookie. Higgins is number two, and I think by a large margin. Ricardo Lewis is number three to me. He's nursing a hamstring. We saw him in the preseason opener.
I think he was higher before he got hurt, especially for a special teams play.
I think he's in no danger of missing, not making this team. I think that he was number three. Higgins is just a polished, legitimate receiver. He's
not
in the one-on-ones. He does so many things like a veteran, but Ricardo Lewis, good special teams player so far. He's got all the size and speed. He's made some nice plays. I think he's the third one there, and I think he makes his team. I think the guy that has come on as of late and is starting to make some catches and some plays, but, you know, college kind of put him in a little bit of a hole. He's not quite the athlete per se that maybe some of the other guys are, but he is the all-time leading receiver in terms of receptions in UCLA history, is Jordan Peyton. And I think that the biggest and most difficult decision facing Sashi Brown and company will be that last receiver spot. Do you go with all four rookies along with Andrew Hawkins and Terrell Pryor? Is that your opening day six receivers, and then you'll get to bring in Josh Gordon in game five? Do you want Marlon Moore there for what he does on special teams? Taylor Gabriel still in the mix, you know, would be a third-year receiver.
Taylor Gabriel
there.
Had a nice day today.
And you wonder what do they do with that sixth spot. And I think of those rookies, we've obviously – Coleman and Higgins are locks. I believe Lewis is also a lock to make this team. But I would be – right now, Peyton is the guy that I think is on that bubble, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
All right. From our good friend Audrey Monster, does it appear that Crow will be a bell cow this year, or will they split reps equally?
I don't know about being a bell cow per se. I think that he's going to be – I think he will lead this team in carries. If let's just say he and Duke both play 16 games, I think he leads this team in carries. I think he probably has a slight lead in overall touches, whereas Duke will lead the backs significantly in receptions. I think you could see a situation where both guys get over 200 touches this year.
Yeah, I mean, go back and look at the Cincinnati running backs the last couple of years. That's going to be the type of format situation, you know. They could both have 800 yards. They both could have 1,000 yards, depending on how the offense goes.
You're right. And when you look at the Cincinnati team and the utilization there, as you talked about, so last year for Jeremy Hill, we'll look at targets plus carries. So Jeremy Hill, 223 carries, 19 targets. So that's 242 opportunities. Giovanni Bernard, 154 carries, 66 targets, 220 opportunities. So slight advantage. And that's kind of the number that I think I see happening here for Crow and Duke. And that was 2015. Go back to 2014 when he was also the coordinator that year. Jeremy Hill, 222 carries, 32 targets. That's 254 opportunities. Bernard had 170 and 60, so 230. So that they both should be north of 200 touches, and I think the difference between the two of them isn't going to be more than, you know, 20 or 30 touches one way or the other.
Yeah, I was definitely happy to see Duke Johnson on the field this week. Because Sunday, I know he had that stinger. He left practice. It was kind of okay, is he going to be all right? And he's been out there, and he had a good day today. Ellis Moore tweets at the show, haven't heard much about Scooby Wright. And I know you mentioned him earlier briefly, but here's a guy that, again, you can kind of see when the light bulbs start to go on and guys start to figure things out, and they figure things out at different times.
Well, one thing that people need to realize is, number one, that Scooby Wright was an outside linebacker or pass rusher in college and is making the move inside. I think it took him a little bit of a while, but lately he's played very well. If you look at the grades, you know, Pro Football Focus, which again, I'm not saying these are the coaches' grades. These are the Pro Football Focus grades for the Cleveland Browns team. That Scooby Wright's one of the top 10 guys on this team, as is Dominic Alexander, as is Tank Carter. And I think that's maybe a little bit of the numbers game that he could run into there. But I think he's done a good job and made a very good accounting of himself so far this season for this Browns team. And he's a guy that you want it to be a tough decision. And where does he end up? Where does Scooby Wright end up? That's going to be a question. I think they want to keep him here. I think, and he's either going to make this team, and Pro Football Focus, in fact, he's the number one graded guy on the Browns defense by Pro Football Focus. Carter's number two. Dominic Alexander's number five. Jamar Taylor, number four. The question becomes, could you carry five inside linebackers on a team like this? Probably not. And so the way that Alexander's played, I think he and Carter have kind of cemented themselves up a little bit higher. It's going to be very interesting to see how that all plays out. And Scooby Wright's a guy that, you know, I certainly think can play in this league, and I hope he has an opportunity to do it with the Browns. I mean, Scooby is perfect for the dog pound.
Be great, man. He's a good guy. Teammates seem to like him. He practices hard, plays hard. Haven't seen a lot of opportunities for him. He hasn't made a lot of plays in games yet, necessarily. I'd like to see that. Just going back and in your mind, you're like, okay, did I hear Donovan, you know, as he stood out a lot on the stats, he really hasn't stood out a ton. But practice time, here's a guy that, you know, maybe took a little bit longer to get things figured out. And everybody's on their own time track when it comes to that. And nice to see him starting to turn the corner.
Yeah, it is nice to see him turn the corner, and hopefully, you know, we can see what happens. There's some good young talent on this team, and when you draft 14 guys, it makes it tough, especially when an undrafted guy like Dominic Alexander shows up like he has. So this is going to be interesting and tough decisions for Sashi Brown and company, but those are good. Tough decisions are good decisions in the National Football League. When we come back, we will talk about the Buccaneers and get kind of their beat writer's perspective on everything that's going on. Greg Oman, the Bucs NFL writer for the Tampa Bay Times, will be with us here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Jason Gibbs here in Tampa. And we go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline right now and bring in Greg Allman, the Bucs NFL writer for the Tampa Bay Times. Greg, thank you so much for being with us today.
No, sure. Thanks for having me. Hope you're doing well.
Yes, certainly doing well. A nice 2 days of joint practices, and we've kind of been given the Browns perspective on everything we saw out there. But from a Tampa perspective, what did you see in these 2 days of joint practice?
You know, we saw, you know, a lot of what we saw with Jacksonville last week, kind of a chance for them to test themselves against another team. You know, I think just the variety of it has some value. You know, I think the 3-4 in talking to the Bucs, you know, I think they really feel like they benefit from getting 2 days of work against a 3-4 defense. I think they're going to face six 3-4 teams this year. They get Arizona in week two. So I think it probably didn't go as well as they would have liked in terms of how well they handled it. But I think that's much better for them than if they just went cold into it and were having to prep in week two for a look they don't see as often, but were completely unprepared for. I think in the long run, they'll be very appreciative to have just nice long looks at a 3-4 this week.
Yeah, and they certainly got that from the Browns under Ray Horton, the Browns defensive coordinator. What stood out to you about this Browns team after seeing them? And I know you saw them last year in the preseason game where the Browns actually looked good in that game, and we know how the season turned out. But I think when you get to see a team in practice, you kind of get a real sense for where they're at, and I thought these 2 days were good. What was kind of your sense of this Browns team?
Yeah, you know, I was intrigued to see to watch the receivers. You know, I think you see the size with Pryor right away. You know, it's certainly interesting to think about what they would be, you know, to get Josh Gordon back at old Josh Gordon peak performance time. And then so many of those rookies, you know, Corey Coleman, some of the other, I think Huggins had a nice catch today. Lots of younger guys. It'll be a receiver group with upside for sure. And then defensively, watching their secondary, you know, I think Joe Hayden had a real good 2 days. I think he had picks both days. Jamar Taylor looked good. It's just lots of things. You can never really tell as much in these practices about offensive line and run game. To me, it's always what pops out the most tend to be the receivers and the DBs. And I think the Browns look good on both counts.
And the receivers, it's something that you're used to seeing. Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans run around. I can tell you last year the Browns had probably one of the smallest wide receiving core in NFL history, and to finally have those size out there. And you've seen with Evans and Jackson what a difference it can make for a quarterback, and especially Jameis Winston. But it sure is nice to see Gordon and Pryor running around there. And what were your impressions of Corey Coleman, the speed he showed on that deep ball today, and then, of course, jumping over the fence, which made, I can tell you because I was there, everyone on the Brown sideline hold their breath for a second.
That's right. That short fence is dangerous. No, I mean, I think, right, I mean, Corey Coleman, I mean, he's a guy, you know, a lot of people thought the Bucs might have used a high pick on receiver, just knowing that Vincent Jackson is getting up there in his 12th year and kind of needing a long-term answer for when he's gone. So I kind of watched the receivers in this draft a lot with an eye toward that, and the Bucs obviously didn't use any of their draft picks on receivers, but Corey was a guy I liked a lot. You know, he has a lot of buzz around him. You think about the rookie receivers around the league, he's probably right up there. And some of that, I think, is just the opportunity in terms of not having a lot of returning experienced receivers to compete with. But he could be, you know, one of the bigger splash rookie receivers in this entire class.
Yeah, I see that there. And what did you think of Robert Griffin III? Because I imagine there's been so much has been made about him and his odyssey. Did it stick out to you like he was a guy who was, you know, struggling to play quarterback, or did he look like someone who was fairly comfortable already in Hugh Jackson's system to you?
No, seemed fine. Honestly, I mean, you know, we saw Robert Griffin here his rookie year with the Redskins, came into Tampa and won down here, had a great kind of final two-minute drill. Just took him down the field. Like, Bucks had a field goal with, I think, a minute 45 to go to take the lead, and then RG3 just marched down the field. And obviously, you know, the last 2 years are kind of a wash for him. But sure, it seems like a good match. I mean, I think you have, in talking to Josh McCown, I mean, obviously Hugh Jackson is so well-regarded for how he handles quarterbacks, what he's able to do offensively. And then, you know, you think about, you know, just Griffin and Josh Gordon getting back together and looking back, and I think, yeah, 2010 or 2009, they had really 1 year they were really going together. But I think Gordon tied for the team lead in receptions the year that he was kind of on go with Griffin there. So the idea of those two clicking in the latter half of this season, you know, could make for a really special combination.
It could. And speaking on the other side, you look at the offense of this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, and I thought this was a good test for the Browns defense. And of course, as you pointed out, it's tough to gauge the running when there isn't real tackling to the ground, et cetera. But I mean, with Doug Martin at the running back position, second leading rusher in the NFL last year, a much, much different looking Jameis Winston, at least to my eye. Physically, the guy has transformed his body. And of course, Evans, Vincent Jackson, we talked about those guys and some talented tight ends. This is a pretty good offense. So what are the expectations for this Buccaneers offense here in 2016?
Yeah, I think they certainly hope to be, you know, even better than last year. I mean, you think about Jameis Winston throwing for 4,000 yards. I think he had 28 total touchdowns rushing and passing, and did that, you know, without a healthy cast of characters to throw to. You know, I think Vincent Jackson was dinged up about half the year. Austin Seferian-Jenkins was hurt, you know, about 9 games out of the year. So you get those two healthy. I think that helps so much, just because when Vincent isn't on the field, I think defenses are much more able to neutralize Mike Evans, kind of shade of safety on his side, those kind of things. So, yeah, I think this is a team that could be, you know, the big part of this coaching change here was the continuity and stability of keeping Dirk Koetter in this offense.
Yep.
And recognizing how well that side of the ball clicked last year. So, you know, Charles Sims is another guy that
yeah,
continued to develop in his third season. I felt like last year the Bucs were a really good offense in terms of yards and not necessarily one in terms of points. So I think there's definitely room for improvement in the red zone, on third down, on coming away with 7 instead of 3 more often, if you will.
You talked about Charles Sims. That's a guy that I loved coming out of school. Reminded me a lot of Matt Forte. And he's a guy that, you know, hasn't really gotten the opportunity to have that full role, especially with Doug Martin's resurgence last year. But how do they kind of plan to utilize those two running backs?
Yeah, literally, exactly like Matt Forte. The running backs coach for Tim Spencer was Forte's running backs coach under Lovie Smith in Chicago. Really saw a lot of the same things. They feel like he's one of the best pass-catching bats in the NFL. I think you'll honestly see him get, 10 snaps a game at receiver, purely at receiver.
Okay.
They really feel like he can run a full route tree, present some speed and mismatches out there as well. So I think he's still a complimentary back. I mean, I think the way they paid Doug Martin, giving him $6-7 million a year, he'll still
kind of
be your bell cow. Yeah, he'll still be your 20-carry back. But I think they're going to make sure to get Charles Sims, you know, 10 to 15 touches a game. And, I mean, he went over 1,000 yards last year. I think he led all NFL running backs in yards per touch. So expect, you know, much of the same 1-2 punch this fall.
Yeah, and you can't expect that. On the other side of the ball, this is a secondary that has some new faces. And I think when, you know, one of the things that I loved watching were the one-on-ones out here. And that's one of the great things you get to see at a joint practice that you really don't get to see in any other environment. One-on-ones between stars on both sides of the ball. And you look at the defensive backfield now and the corners, especially for the Bucks with Brent Grimes here, now Ultron Werner, of course, and then Vernon Hargraves, the third drafted in the first round. That's a pretty good trio. Jonathan Banks still here. I mean, I thought that some of those one-on-ones were fun to watch. And this is going to be, has the potential to be one of the better secondaries in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's definitely been much improved. I mean, last year, whether it be the secondary or the lack of a pass rush, you know, I mean, opponents were able to complete 70% of their passes against the Bucs, worst in franchise history in terms of just letting the ball get to the opponent and get downfield the way they did. So in adding Grimes as a short-term fix and then adding Hargraves, you know, as a long-term answer, I think they've definitely upgraded there. They're basically the same guys at safety. But I think they feel like having Mike Smith here, having a more aggressive defense, having a more effective pass rush will make them a better secondary, too. I think part of the reason they didn't get a lot of interceptions last year is that they really didn't pressure quarterbacks. They didn't really make people get into uncomfortable throws, get into third and long in those situations where you kind of have to force something. And I think they hope to do that much more in 2016.
What are the expectations for this team for a full season? What are the goals for 2016, and what do you think, as someone who covers this team and knows them well, what do you think are realistic expectations for what they can do in the NFC South?
Right. It's one of those where you know they're going to be better, you don't know how much better. So, I mean, to go from 2-14 to 6-10 was a big leap, but this is a team that was 6-6 with four games to play. So I think they felt like they probably left a little bit on the table there in terms of how they finished this past season. I think their schedule is tougher. They face both Super Bowl teams. They go out west three times. They go to San Francisco, San Diego, and Arizona. So it's not an easy schedule to where I think they could be a better team and it wouldn't even necessarily be reflective in the record. But I go into it right now, assuming this defense is a step better under Mike Smith, kind of thinking they're maybe an 8-8 team. Anything better than that, you know, competing for a wild card, they'll be one of the better stories in football. Anything worse than that, I think they'll be disappointed with what they're able to do here in this first season with Dirk Koetter.
How different do you think Jameis Winston is entering his second season than he was coming in as a rookie?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think he's more confident. I think the coaches will be more confident in giving him more on his plate. I think he probably went to the line of scrimmage last year with probably two options to choose from, and now I think there's a much wider menu of options they can give him. And I think they know that he recognizes defenses better, understands his options better. The question is just how well that translates to him limiting his turnovers. Had 15 interceptions last year. They'd love to get that number down. So I think he could be a more efficient quarterback. I think we've already seen a big step forward in him as a leader. You know, I mean, last year, I think as a 21-year-old, it's hard to command authority. Especially with a team that has some veterans on it. But this is very much his team now. He's the guy in the middle of the huddle. He's the guy that's very much at the center of this team, offense, defense, anything. He's done that at a very early age, but this is a guy that won a Heisman Trophy and a national championship as a redshirt freshman in college, so he's kind of done that before, if you will.
Absolutely, he certainly has. Greg, did you ever think you're going to be talking so much about a kicker and his struggles in the preseason?
No, I did not. A relatively quiet day today, but no, as of right now, I mean, you'd have to say at this point in training camp, Roberto Aguayo is probably the biggest question mark and the biggest storyline in the Bucs preseason. And it's really kind of been that way to a certain extent since the draft. I mean, since they traded up, went up and got him at number 59 of the draft, you know, not a move that a lot of people agreed with.
No, people are having a field day with it, the poor kid.
Oh, sure, yeah. But, I mean, the Bucs have had a lot of confidence in him. You know, we had kind of wondered, you know, a couple weeks ago, you would have said, gosh, what's going to happen the first time Aguayo misses a big kick? You know, like, what will the national outrage be, if you will? And he's taken care of that for us. He's already answered that. And, you know, it's kind of escalated here. And the first game, it's just one missed extra point. The second game, it's two missed field goals. You guys were probably out of practice yesterday.
Oh, yes.
When he badly missed a kick. I mean,
he kicked one into the dirt. He kicked a sinking liner.
Right. I don't know that it was ever – I don't think that kick was ever as high as the bottom of the uprights in any case.
Right.
So, again, right now it's all preseason. It's all something he can work his way out of. But this is, you know, this is a conversation we're still having 3 weeks from now. It's going to be a big issue and something that kind of hangs over a lot of other things that probably aren't even as, you know, as big a deal. So he's got two more games to figure it out. And again, we had something in the paper today looking at a lot of the big kickers in the last 20 years and how many of them stumbled out of the gates and weren't very good when they first started. I think Janikowski, you know, opened his NFL career 7-15 on field goals. And obviously has managed to stick around and be a good kicker. I think there just might be a little bit more of a learning curve than fans had hoped for.
Yeah, you think there shouldn't be much, and I do think that Aguayo made the comment, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, that going to the NFL was going to be easier than high school. Which,
you know, I don't know if I remember him saying that. He's a confident kid, and I don't think it's a cockiness necessarily. He's been very nice to deal with, very appreciative of the opportunity he has. But again, this is probably the first real on-field adversity he's had to deal with. This is a guy that never missed a kick inside 40 yards in college, had a lot of accolades, you know, early in his career. So it's something that, you know, mentally he has to push through and kind of figure out a way to solve it, hopefully for the Bucs, before the season really gets going.
Yes, indeed. Greg, appreciate the time. Thank you so much for being with us. And it was fun to see these joint practices and got great hospitality down here in Tampa, although a little hot yesterday. Today was much nicer. And Friday night should be interesting when we see, you know, what these guys have learned from each other and when they go do it for real in the third preseason game of the season.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me on.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate our guest right there. Greg Allman, Bucs NFL writer for the Tampa Bay Times, with us, giving us some perspective from a different side there. The Buccaneers beat writer's stance and view of what he saw in these joint practices, and obviously came away, as pretty much everybody, impressed with this Browns offense, impressed with the receivers. And we talked about Joe Hayden. He was impressed with him, as well as Jamar Taylor on the defensive side of the ball. We'll be back with our final thoughts right now here on CBD, wrapping up this hump day edition, 2 days before the Browns' third preseason game of the year, the penultimate preseason game against Tampa Bay Buccaneers down at Raymond James Stadium Friday night in prime time. Back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Jason Gibbs in Tampa. Jason, I thought it was good right there to get a perspective of a Tampa beat writer on what he saw and you know, kind of confirm somebody who has no bias, no background, no care really, other than to just say what he saw from this team. And it was, I thought it was good to hear his perspective on certainly this offense and those receivers.
You know, I was on the one side of the field where all the stands were today, so you can hear conversations with people, you know, like yesterday when Tampa's second round pick, their kicker, you know, screws up and misses the kick, and the one guy's like, "We want Murray back," and they're yelling at him, and they're yelling at the Browns, you know, listening to the fans and whatnot. But to hear some of the media members from Tampa going, "My God, I didn't know Terrell Pryor was that big," or "Geez, Josh Gordon, they say he's not in shape. He certainly looks like he's in shape." Like,
he's got like a
all these guys, pack. All these guys, to hear people that don't cover the team every day go, "Wow, there's some players on this football team."
And that's the thing. Last year, I mean, I remember doing the show last year, and we're like, who are the players on this team? Who are the players?
Who's going to start?
Who are you going to even potentially build around? And it's exciting to see in a year. Granted, it's early, and we need to see more, but there are signs of it. And that was my point, was that the things that we had been seeing every day, and to hear people, you know, Anita Marks came in town from ESPN to say, you know, "I've heard so much about these receivers, I want to see them for myself," and then to come away impressed. And that's the thing. There's actually hype about something to see on the Browns.
Yeah.
When's the last time there was some hype about, "Man, you got to see this on the Browns offense"? It was probably Josh Gordon by himself.
Yeah. I mean, we said it. They're going to score points.
This is what we're promising at this point.
Yes. I don't know about anything else, but they're going to score more than 10 or 13 points a game. Oh, it's not going to be a struggle to get
north
to 13.
Of 20, no doubt, no doubt in my mind. I want to thank our producer, Matt Fontan. We want to thank Greg Allman, the Bucs writer for the Tampa Bay Times, who was with us as well. And we just wanted to say, you know, we'll be back tomorrow. It'll be myself, Gibbs, and Matt Wilhelm tomorrow. Friday, we'll also be getting you ready for the game down here from Tampa. And then it will be Browns preseason game number 3. So thanks for listening to another edition. For Jason Gibbs, I'm Nathan Segura, saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.